It's one thing to walk in blessing in your own life. It's another thing to see that blessing come upon your children and your grandchildren. How do we do that?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In a few minutes, I am going to be introducing a special guest, an author I've had on the broadcast with me before, a man known to many in the New York City area, and the author of a book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Leaving a Legacy of Transformation Through Your Family. Before I do that, though, I want to tell you a story. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you've got a question, you'll be able to ask me or my guest, whom I'll introduce in a moment, if you have a question about passing on blessings to the next generation, how to see that the stands that you take, the values that you live for, are passed on to the next generation, a very, very important subject. If you've got questions, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire. But first, a story. I was at a funeral yesterday, and I was coming home from the funeral and sharing with a friend that had traveled with me, and we were, you know, kind of unwinding together and reflecting on the events of the day. But I was getting some important sports updates on my phone. She said, "Sports updates on your phone? I mean, why are you getting sports updates on your phone when you're just coming from a funeral? Why are you even thinking about sports?" Well, because this was a little different. This is a little different. And, they were riveting sports updates. It was a baseball game. I don't know if you followed it. He said, "What are you talking about? Well, stay with me. Stay with me." And the first, 2-1, our team. One player, 2-strike hit, solid put out, 6-4, them leading us. Oh, that's bad. Bottom of the third. Oh, we put up 7 runs in 1 inning. Whoa. Uh-oh, sixth inning, 13-13, two-run triple, we got 7, whoa, now we got to hold the other team, no, the guy that hit the two-run triple made the winning out, yes, you got to be kidding me, and we end up winning, 20-15, why was I following it, because it was my grandson Andrew's first baseball game of the year, Andrew's first baseball game of the year. 8-year-old Andrew, and I wasn't there to see it because I was going to be at a funeral. But I told my daughter Meg, I said, "Hon, you need to be sending me text updates because I'm going to be following this from a distance. Hey, that's a grandchild. Hey, that's part of our family, this generation and the next generation and the following generation." And yeah, I'm involved in ministry day and night. And here it was a funeral. Funerals are, even in the Lord, are serious matters. But I'm a family man as well. And to me, ministry and family are not two contradictory things. And following Jesus and living for him with heart, soul, mind, strength, by life or by death, goes hand in hand with transmitting blessing to your kids and to your grandkids. So how is it that we can walk in blessing, that we ourselves can experience the favor of God, the goodness of God in our own lives, that we take a stand for values, and those things are transmitted to the next generation? Those things are not thrown out and lost, and now we've got to start all over again, and oh man, what do we do? And you know, we ran really hard, but our kids are all backslidden. We're following Jesus, but our kids are away from God. And what about the big city? Can you do it in a city? With all the pressure and all the peer pressure and all the negativity and all the junk, is it possible to really live these things out? My guest, Bishop Joe Matera, will be joining me on the other side of the break as we talk about walking in generational blessings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. It's Wednesday. Wednesdays on The Line of Fire, we focus on the world. We focus on moral, social, cultural issues here. And is there anything more fundamental to moral, cultural, social issues than the family? Is there anything more fundamental to moral, cultural, and social issues than our children? Is there anything more fundamental to moral, cultural, social issues than husband and wife relationships and what comes out of those relationships? It's something we need to talk about. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Look, I am not here to criticize parents whose kids are struggling. The last thing you need is criticism heaped on you. The last thing you need is someone throwing stones at you. We raised two of our children. One of our kids went through a period of rebellion, and it was much more challenging with one child than the other child. I've got friends that have had several kids in rebellion, and then those kids have turned back and got right with God as the years go on, and some still haven't. We continue to pray with them. And then there are others where just each kid is like a wonder and amazing and a dream. But what's the use, friends, of us running hard and giving it our best and going for it and giving our lives for the gospel and giving our lives for truth and giving our lives for standards of righteousness only to lose them within our own home, only to fail within our own home, only to see our own kids not living those values out, or we fight so hard to take a stand for what's right, and then the next generation comes along and either squanders it or turns it in the opposite direction. So this is a really, really important subject, and I'm so pleased that my friend and colleague, Bishop Joe Matera, has written this book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Leaving a Legacy of Transformation Through Your Family. He's the presiding bishop of Christ Covenant Coalition, overseeing bishop of Resurrection Church in New York, multi-ethnic congregation. I've had the pleasure and joy of preaching there. He also serves as the third presiding bishop of the International Communion of Evangelical Churches. And he has been a key player in New York, although he ministers far beyond that, in New York, working with city pastors for many years and standing for marriage, standing for biblical values coming to the family, and he's lived that out. I've been with his family. I know some of his kids. He has lived this out, and he's put it in a book. And the going through this book, one of the nicest things about it is it's practical. Step by step, practical, how to live this out, how to walk in generational blessing. Even study guides just built right into it. So without further ado, my friend and colleague, Bishop Joe Matera. Joe, how you doing, man?
Hey, it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, I was just in New York last week and had a great time with a number of the pastors and got to speak at a fine campus in the city. So always thinking about you when I'm in the city.
Yeah, no, I heard some of my friends were there, and they told me good things about the meeting and that you made an impact on them. So that was great. I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Yeah, well, we will continue to connect. So Joe, let me ask you this. I'm sure You have friends, colleagues in ministry, or just fellow believers that they love the Lord, they're serious about the Lord, and yet it seems they have not been able to transmit their values to their kids. And yet I've watched some of your kids minister or seen what some of your kids are doing, and they're taking the torch from you and running past you. How does that happen? Is it really possible to follow principles, Joe, that based on those principles that we can impart blessing and standards to the following generations?
Yeah, I think my opinion, the issue of marriage and family is the hardest thing in the world to do and to try to do well or do effectively. And I can't claim that I'm a perfect representation of marriage or of a father. I can't tell you how many hours and hours and hours, days, I've spent fasting and praying for the sake of my marriage, battling for my marriage, battling for my kids. It isn't a simple thing where you just, follow some principles. But the most important thing I could say would be that you have to be intentional. You have to understand that this is a distraction to your main calling, that this isn't just some addendum to you know, who God has called you to be, that, you know, looking at you being a Jewish believer, know this better than me and better than most, that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob doesn't look at my generation as different from the next or the one before. It's all an extension of who I am. And and so I don't, you know, look at my kids as an annoyance. I look at them as the main way I'm going to deposit my life for a legacy. And so if I fail at that place, in my opinion, I don't care how much celebrity status I get or how much money or how big my ministry is, if I fail in that way, I think I've failed in the most important part of my life.
Now, Joe, what you're saying is very profound. And two things I want to jump right on. Again, the new book by Joe Matera, Walk in Generational Blessings, available in Christian bookstores, or you can get it online, Amazon.com, ChristianBook.com. A couple things, Joe. You mentioned the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Let's start there. What does that say in and of itself, that is how God refers to himself in Scripture?
Well, I think it's a profound thing to understand, and that's one of the things that triggered the book when I was reading Exodus chapter 3, and God revealed himself, the flaming bush, to Moses as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he was basically saying to Moses that he began to work in the life of Abraham, and that what he was revealing to Moses was a progressive, revelatory, covenantal way of revealing himself to the world. And so he was building upon what he said to Abraham, as we read in Genesis chapter 12, when he told him to leave his father's house. God would bless those who would bless him and curse those who would curse him, that in him all the families of the earth would be blessed, and that he passed it on to Isaac, then to Jacob, who then became 70, who then went to Egypt. And then we find the call several hundred years later to Moses. So what that shows us is that God works generationally, and that Moses couldn't have delivered the people of God from Egypt if he didn't have something to build on with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Mm. Now you said that your kids, you have to realize your kids are not a distraction. They're, you know, I mean, here you're a bishop, you're in ministry, you're preaching, you have a church, you speak to city leaders, you travel to other places and bring wisdom from the Lord. Surely, kids, I mean, there's kids. You know, mom can care for the kids. You got big things to do, better things to do, important things to do. Do you think that's a common mindset, that the kids are a distraction or kind of secondary to the real calling on our lives?
Oh, yes. I mean, as you opened up this dialogue, that most of the time our faith is not properly transmitted to our children, I don't believe that's because God isn't able to impart that. The premise of my book is that God does already have a call on our biological children, not just spiritual children. And the emphasis on spiritual children oftentimes is because we failed so miserably with our biological family, and that we just emphasize, you know, spiritual children, which is important as well. So I think that from my interaction with people, you know, you got anywhere from single moms who pulling their hair out of their head, they don't know how to raise their boys, which is not their fault. They're a victim of the overall cultural decline, the fragmentation of family. And then you do have two-parent homes, and you do have ministers who are all over the world saving souls and sacrificing their children on the altar of ministry. And then you talk to them, and basically there is no set family devotional time. They don't intentionally try to pray with their kids. A lot of the men, including pastors, leave praying with their children up to their wife and even discipling their children. It seems to be something that is an option. It's a nice thing to do, wherein, you know, what I did, and by all means, I'm not perfect, and I've messed up in many ways, of course, but, you know, from when my first son was born, I have five biological children, I started discipling them. By the time my children were 3 years old, they already knew more of the Old Testament and more of the New Testament in terms of the illustration stories, using picture Bibles and things like that. They already knew more than most of the people in the church. I found that that was the most important thing I did. So there was a combination of all the spiritual warfare, but there was an intentional discipling of the children. And when I talk to other people, I do even hear words like, you know, if my kids weren't around, or I can't wait till my kids were older, I'll be able to do more traveling, I'll be able to minister more, you know.
Life starts when the kids leave the home, huh? Hey, listen, we come back. Let's start to get into some specifics of this book, Walk in Generational Blessings by Joseph Matera. Oh, the foreword is written by his son.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us today. My special guest, a dear friend, co-worker, a man that I both respect and love, Joseph Matera, author of the new book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Leaving a Legacy of Transformation Through Your Family. I'm really going to be hogging the time with Bishop Matera on the show, but I might squeeze in a question or two. If you've got a real serious question about this issue of transmitting blessing standards to the following generations, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH. Joe, going through the book, there's a foreword. You've got some great endorsements, but then there's a foreword by a man named Jason Matera, who's probably better known around America than you are, and is he's got something on both of us. He's a New York Times national best-selling author, probably a couple times over now. Jason writes the foreword to your book. That's pretty significant, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Originally, he was supposed to write the last chapter, but he didn't have the time because of his own book deadline, so I asked him just to do the foreword. But I have my younger son, Justin, who wrote a chapter in the book called Perpetuating the Blessing. That's one of the chapters in the book. And
I've spent time with Justin, too, and he's a phenomenal young man.
Yeah, it's called Perpetuation of the Covenant, Chapter 7. That's what he wrote. So,
so in other words, this book is not like I weigh 600 pounds and I've just written a fitness book. How to be healthy and fit, or I'm addicted to alcohol and cigarettes and drugs, and I've just finished a book talking about how to live a free life. You didn't write a book hoping that your kids might turn out right. You've written a book now having raised your kids. I mean, you still have some that are younger, but you basically raised a family, and you've got your sons participating in your own book. You made clear, you've prayed, you've fasted, you've also made clear you're far from a perfect man, but you're convinced that the principles that you followed are biblical, and therefore they'll work in any family, in any circumstances.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. And I believe that the first and most important thing is to really get a revelation of the most important passage in the Bible is Genesis 1, 27 and 28, where the Bible talks about six steps on how we have cultural or global transformation, and it starts with marriage and it starts with having children. So once you start with that, you realize that as important as some of these other things are, whether it's crusades, this, that, and the other thing, if we don't follow the clear biblical mandate of prioritizing family and marriage and children and passing the faith down, we will not have a result of global transformation that's going to last. And it might take some generations, but to me, that passage that some call the cultural commission or the cultural mandate, some call it the dominion mandate, to me, that's what set me off. It rocked my world in the early 1990s. So that really helped me understand my priorities in life.
So that just as God created Adam, mankind, in his image, male and female, he created them. So that's the foundation of all the male and female coming together as one, then reflecting the fullness of the image of God, and then being fruitful and multiplying, and then spreading over the earth and dominating. And now we dominate not by taking over, but by being disciples and making disciples, so that Genesis 1 is lived out through the Matthew 28 commission to go and make disciples of the nations. So that in order to do that, you have to think generationally, because we're looking at something that is global, and something that culminates basically the end of this age, the return of Jesus, regardless of eschatology. It culminates, it's over a period of generations. So we have to be thinking generationally. Even to be obedient to the Lord today, I need to be thinking in a multi-generational way.
Absolutely. And one of the Achilles heels I have that I bring out in the book is that most of the preaching today in evangelical church is one generational, like how I can write my ticket with God and how I could have my miracle, seven steps for my happiness, and there's a consumerist mentality in the church. People come to church so they can get fed, and then you got others who go to the other extreme. They're out, you know, in church seven nights a week, praying for revival while the kids are at home watching internet pornography or on Facebook 7 hours a day. So you know, we really need to have this balance. We need to center our life on the Lord, but also have a practical application with our family.
Yeah, and Joe, we've got a break coming up here, and the second half hour of the broadcast, I want to go through some of the step-by-step things. I'm looking at the chapter, Let's Do the Math, and third chapter in your book. I want to start there when we come back. But just very quickly, let's just take a minute. You have a congregation. You've been pastoring in Brooklyn with a team for working with you now for years. So within your congregation, have you seen families living this out? Is this God blessed you and your five kids, you and your wife and your five kids, or have you actually seen these things being lived out within your own congregation now, within the families there?
I think it's mixed, because we have people that have come from broken families, and they came to Christ after their children were already 12 years old or teenagers, so it's been really a challenge. We have others who were brought up with this kind of teaching, and they're doing really well with their kids. And then you have others, and you know this as someone who's been a pastor, who have heard this message, but they just didn't want to pay the price. Even my own church, I have people who have lost their kids, even though their children were born into a Christian family. And so it's always mixed. It's not like everybody's going to be able to walk this out. And one of my own children is struggling in their faith, but they go back and forth. And, you know, I went on a 72-day juice fast several years ago, and God's answering my prayers now, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even though I discipled every one of them, there's also that emotional connection that's needed. And I think with that particular child, I probably lacked a bit in the emotional connection area, where I could have done better because I was a young parent. Right. So it's a complicated thing, but the main thing is our intention and seeking God, and God will
God
help
honors
us.
It. God honors it. And if we hold to what the Word of God teaches and to the principles God lays out, doing with heart and soul, we see fruit. But I this is a no-hype guest. That's one reason we like each other. He speaks the truth. The book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Bishop Joe Matera. If you're going to be leaving, I can't listen the next half hour. Well, get the book. Get the book there. We got that problem solved for you right there. Okay, friends, remember, the Real Kosher Jesus is out. The book is out. We'll be sending out the signed hardcover copies to those that pre-ordered very, very soon. If you don't have your copy yet, we've got a special resource offer with my outreach lecture from Hebrew University. So call or order 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Call now.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Is it possible that the problems in our society are deeper than we realize? Is it possible that we are looking to put Band-Aids on someone, so to say, with a heart condition? Is it possible that we are not recognizing how fundamentally we have strayed from biblical values and from the way God intended life, marriage, family to be? I say yes. We need to get back to the road map. We need to get back to the divine plan, and that is found in Scripture. My guest today, Bishop Joe Matera, helps us find our way. He's the author of a new book, Walk in Generational Blessings. You say, Matera, where have I heard his name? Well, if you're in the greater New York area, he's a well-known leader in the city for many years, but you've probably heard his son, Jason, his New York Times best-selling author. He's the one that's become well-known. He'll go up to a congressman or to a celebrity or just talk to them, and next thing they're, you know, it's not being videotaped, and next thing the whole nation is watching these clips. 866-34-TRUTH. Jason doesn't have a quiet week, does he?
No, he wrote two books, one at the age of 26, and the one that he just wrote came out March 17th, and both of them became New York Times bestsellers. So two for two, it's amazing.
Two for two, yeah, and when you start like that, it's easy to keep the momentum if you do it right. Yeah, I've got the Hollywood Hypocrites book. That would require a little bit different show than today's show, but he said that to me, and amazing. All right, chapter three of your book, and we're going to have to just do little snippets of things and talk about some key issues. It's called Let's Do the Math. You're talking about what the average family size used to be, what it is now. And again, the issue is that if you don't have sufficient children on average per family, then the next generation is unable to support the older generation, and there are other societal implications as well. I said on the air the other day, we were talking about racism issues, and I said on the air how I feel there must be some special calling on the Black American community because of the way Satan tries to assault and wipe it out. And you've got very, very striking, painful testimony by Gerard M. Nadal, I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, PhD, Center for Morality and Public Life, Advisory Board, Good Counsel Home, Staten Island, New York. He's addressing the New York City Council and going by stats from 2008 about abortion. Tell us about that, Joe. This is very disturbing, and it points to a larger issue in terms of the attack on family.
Yes, it's really quite disconcerting, and of course it's part of a larger cultural issue and part of the decline in the West of Christianity. You can get more about this from Pat Buchanan's book, Death of the West, which is a profound book. He talks about how the death rate in Western Europe is higher than the birth rate, and that's why they have to import a lot of immigrants, who are especially Muslims, and they are really hurting the culture in terms of keeping their European understanding of culture and Christianity. And then what we see here in the United States is genocide taking place with the African American community. And in the book, I talk about how the average, based on the census, is blacks will have 1,260 abortions per 1,000 live births, which means that there are more being killed by their own mothers than are being born. Hispanics have 687 abortions per 1,000 live births. Whites in New York have 512 abortions for every 1,000. So they're all doing it, and it's, all of these stats are alarming, but with the African Americans, they're actually killing off their future. It's pretty.
All right, so there's a larger attack than on family, the mentality about kids, how our whole society's changed in that, and then even how Planned Parenthood targeted Black community. True.
Fire we want, for fire we. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I don't want to go straight back to my guest, Bishop Joe Matera, who is the author of the brand new book, very, very practical, helpful, step-by-step book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Leaving a Legacy of Transformation Through Your Family. You can get it in Christian bookstores. You can get it online book dealers, christianbook.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com. Order the book. You'll be blessed. You'll be enriched. Joe, right before the break, we were talking about shockingly high abortion statistics. I mentioned something that you talk about in the book, the Planned Parenthood assault on the black community. You mentioned child-hating culture. We're not pointing fingers, obviously. We're trying to stand in solidarity and sound a warning. But can you talk about this briefly, either Margaret Sanger's mentality or with Planned Parenthood or the child-hating culture that surrounds us, that it's just bigger than we realize, and it's affected even believers?
Yes, well, I think the average size of the American family to turn the 20th century was 6.3, and now I think we have an average of 1 to 2 children. I document that in the book, and this could be traced from the influence of Dr. Kinsey and Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who basically was able to convince the intellectual elites that population control was essential if we were going to survive. And the most important thing they did was separate sex from procreation, which mm-hmm. opened up the door to illicit sex, to everything, to homosexuality, same-sex marriage, abortion. All of that came out of the separation of sexual relation from having children, which came from breaking the taboos set by Margaret Sanger and Dr. Kinsey. And then, of course, Margaret Sanger started the first abortion clinics in Harlem because in her writings she said that the black race were like weeds that had to be picked out and thrown or burned or, you know, weeded out of the earth. I can't quote it exactly, but she definitely was trying to rid the world of the African-American race that she thought was inferior. And when we were not able to do that because of the Civil War and because of the civil rights and all the things that came out of that, legally we couldn't do that. So then she said, well, the poor will just kill their own people off. That's the way to get rid of the blacks and the unwanted race of people. And so it's not an accident that the first abortion clinic was in Harlem, and it really disturbs me when I see African American leaders like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and others who take public stance for pro-choice positions when their own people are being decimated more by abortion than anything that's ever happened to the African Americans in this country.
Yeah, and according to this testimony in your book, the number of aborted blacks, according to the Centers for Disease Control, outnumbers the next leading 7 causes of death among blacks combined. This is again, time to wake up and realize there is a satanic assault against the family. There is a satanic assault against our children. There's a satanic assault against the generations to come. And that's why We cannot only be pro-life and then care about the mothers and care about providing for the children that are born. We have to think about raising kids in godly homes. So you said, Joe, that the first principle laid out in Genesis 1, beginning with God's creation of male, female, then marriage, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth, or fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion, and then that gets lived out through the Great Commission. Be disciples and go and make disciples of the nations. Let's talk through a few things practically. You're talking to moms and dads that are listening. Let's start with the understanding that we must be thinking in a multi-generational way, that our kids are an extension of our life, that we continue to live on in this world through our biological children and our spiritual children. talk to moms and dads. We can't cover all the contents of the book. That's why folks need to get the book. But let's talk with moms and dads about things they need to do in their thinking and their activities and their actions that can produce multi-generational blessing.
Well, one thing that's important to understand is that spiritual warfare is not just going to church, screaming at the devil and stepping on demons.
Well, that's fun, Joe. You feel that's a lot of that's exciting, man. Raising kids is not that exciting, but man, jumping around and screaming, that's exciting.
Well, I posit in the book that one of the reasons why we're losing so much in the era of spiritual warfare is when you read the book of Numbers, chapter 1 and 2, you find that before Israel went to war, they had a lineup by tribes and heads of households, and you couldn't even go to war if you couldn't line up under a head of household. That is to say, you had to prove your lineage, you had to prove what family you belonged to, which meant that they had to have their family in order before they dared to go into battle. And I'm not saying we can't fight the devil if our marriage is perfect or anything like that, but the point is they put a premium on having right headship and everything aligned under God through family. And so it's a lot easier to go to church to pray and fast than it is to stay home and deal with the attitude of a 16-year-old daughter. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't pray and fast. I seek God every day. I pray. I go on long fast. But that can't replace doing the hard work of spending time with your kids, of discipling them, of having regular family prayer altars and devotional times. Every morning I get up, I don't care if I go to bed at 2 in the morning, I'm up at 5:45. I help make my kids breakfast. I give them Bible memorization times, you know, where I go through the Bible with them. I pray with them. And that's about 15, 20 minutes every single morning, every time they're going to school. So that accumulation over weeks and weeks and weeks and years, you time that by 8 years of them actually before they started grammar school, starting kindergarten, you time that 15 minutes a day over all the weeks they're in school, and plus the family altars at least once or twice a week. That's hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of Bible memorization, of training and worldview, or just talking to them and getting them to pray, commit their day to God. It's simple prayers. It's not profound. And by the time my kids are probably 7 or 8 years old, they've memorized the Ten Commandments, the Lord's Prayer, the Apostles' Creed, John 3:16-20, John chapter 1, almost the whole chapter, Hebrews chapter 1, some of the Psalms like Psalm 23, Psalm 91. I mean, I go on and on and on. And this was a little at a time, starting at the age of 3 or 4, every day just hitting simple passages. And then it all adds up, and you just wonder, wow, my God, how much of the Bible they know. Well, it took years and years and years of patience to get them to have that kind of knowledge.
And also show them that Dad cared.
Absolutely. I treasure my time with my kids, and even my son in the foreword wrote that no matter what he does, no matter how much success he has in the world, he'd rather spend time with his family. That is his highest treasure because that's how we raised him. Mm. So there is, and you as a Jewish believer, you understand. I think this book is probably more Hebraic than it is anything else. This is what would have kept the Jewish family traditions together through all the persecution and
absolutely
all these years. If they didn't have this as the center, they wouldn't be a race anymore.
Yeah, you know, Deuteronomy 6, which is the fundamental proclamation that religious Jews make every day, "Hear Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one," then goes on with things that you do in your own life, but then you teach these things to your children. That's the fundamental word, and that's spoken day in, day out, day in, day out. And even if we think biblically, people were known as, say, Simon Bar-Jonah. You were the son of the father. There was this clear understanding, and Ezekiel is one little verse, like mother, like daughter. These things are not just sayings, they are truths. And Joe, we got a minute before the break, but you know, the tax thing, pay me now or pay me later. It's the truth. If you don't invest the time and pour into the kids now, you're going to pay for it later. Isn't it true?
Oh, absolutely. And you don't have to be a Bible scholar to do this. the book of Proverbs is written so that we could have something to teach our children. Even just read one chapter of Proverbs to them every day. It's just so easy to do this. Get them to memorize simple passages. Pray with them once a week. This is not very difficult to do. Anyone could do this.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's love lived out, and then it's that simple determination that the most important thing I have. And listen, I am not speaking about this as some parenting expert. Okay, our kids are in their 30s now, and they're great kids, but I'm referring you to a book that lays out a lot of practical biblical wisdom. Friends, if we don't get this right, what's the use of all our other exploits? We got a few more minutes with Bishop Joe Matera, the author of Walk in Generational Blessings.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest, Bishop Joseph Matera. Here's a quote from his book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Leaving a Legacy of Transformation Through Your Family. You can get it at Christian Bookstore. You can get it online. Discipleship, Impartation, Reproduction, Multiplication is the name of the chapter, and it begins with these words: our thoughts beget actions, which beget habits, which beget patterns of life, which beget our life's destination, which in turn passes on blessings or cursings to our children's children. Joe, this is obviously an important subject. Your schedule's busy, but you took time to write this book. You've got a chapter called God Remembers. And I think there's a strength that we have when we understand God's covenantal dealings, not just a responsibility, but a strength. So tell me about this principle of God remembers. What's the strength of it, the power of it for us as believers today?
Well, in this chapter, I talk about how God kept on referring back to David, King David, when he was dealing with future kings, when he wouldn't give the full expression of his judgment on a king because he remembered David, or he would say to a particular king, you did not serve me the way your father David did. So God constantly used David as a standard for his descendants, and there was judgment either not meted out or not meted out as strongly as he would have done so because he remembered David. And so it teaches us that what we do in this life will continue to speak long after we're gone. Even as Abel, it says in Hebrews chapter 11, being dead yet still speaks. So what kind of legacy are we going to leave? It's not just what will people say about you at your funeral. It's going to be what kind of actions will be catalyzed by your life 2 centuries after you're gone, 100 years after you're gone.
Mm.
In other words, something may physically leave our life, but it doesn't leave our legacy. It's constantly going to speak. It's constantly, everything that we say and do, either people are watching, or we are imparting to somebody, or we're being a model for our children or our families. And the Bible says Proverbs 13, that a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So we need to think at least 3 generations ahead. We can't think further than that because we don't have the capacity emotionally or mentally to do that. But I believe it's clear in Scripture that God requires us to think at least 3 generations ahead up until our great-grandchildren. And so that sobers us. And it humbles us. It shows us the incredible impact that we have.
Mm. And you're actually saying that based on what we see about David in Scripture, that you're saying that it's actually possible that God will go an extra step of having mercy on our kids or grandkids or great-grandkids because of the way that we lived or because of the prayers that we prayed, or will give them special aid or protection. Obviously, they're still responsible for their actions, but that the legacy can be so great that God can actually intervene based on how I live today and how I conducted myself before him, that can actually influence how he deals with my kids and future generations?
Yes, absolutely. My grandmother was saved when she was in her 20s, became the first woman Hispanic ordained minister in New York City history. She was the first Hispanic woman ordained, and she prayed 3 hours a day, preached the gospel, started a church. She prayed her whole family to Christ, into faith in Christ. Even though my mother didn't serve the Lord right away, she eventually came back to God when she was in her late 30s, and that impacted my life when I was 16. And here I am preaching the gospel. My mother did, but my grandmother did. And quite an amazing thing. When you look at it, I have to owe what happened to me to the prayers of my grandmother. Of course, my mother prayed for me as well and impacted me directly, but that really came as a result of the prayers.
You know, and I'm thinking of something physical as you say that our grandson Andrew, I was talking about him at the beginning of the show to illustrate the point before you're on the air. He's a redhead. Well, Nancy, my wife, is a redhead. So one of our daughters had a little bit reddish hair in the midst of brown, but she was certainly not a redhead. But now we've got a red-haired, freckled grandson, and you think that's through the genes going back two generations. It can happen like that physically. It can happen like that all the more spiritually and even more multi-generationally. Hey, Joe, we are out of time, but just take 30 seconds to tell our listeners what they can expect if they get your book, Walk in Generational Blessings.
Well, first of all, I want to say you could download it on your Kindle as well, and to make it easier. And I just think, you know, just go online and read some of the book reviews on Amazon. One lady described it like watching the movie The Matrix when they took the blue pill and they woke up finally. Christians are being transformed. They're looking at the Bible in a different way. They're looking at family. They're looking at their purpose. It'll help connect the dots. It'll help give you a sense of purpose and make the practical things of this world fit your ministry and your destiny like never before. Too often we separate family from ministry, and this will connect both and really encourage you, because all of us go through challenges in marriage and raising kids. This will give us a greater destiny and calling on our life, and it could get a greater sense of that to motivate us to tough it out in those hard times.
Yeah, and again, the book, friends, is written very practically. It's rich, rich in Scripture, and even written with things to think about with each chapter. We start thinking generationally. It gives us a whole lot of hope, too, not just as we look to the past and what God has done, but to his long-term plans. Hey, Joe, it's a joy working with you, calling you a colleague and friend, and may the Lord bless your every endeavor for him.
Man, thank you so much, and thanks for keeping up the fight and being such a great scholar and activist, and you're an example and model for all of us.
Well, thanks, man. Glad we're in this together. God bless you, dear brother. Again, the book, Walk in Generational Blessings, Bishop Joe Matera. Okay, friends, as we've been talking about this book through the broadcast, I can't help but tell you that The Real Kosher Jesus is out in my hands. Looks beautiful, beautifully produced, 247 pages. The number one best Jewish outreach tool ever produced. Make sure you listen to tomorrow's show. It's going to be a special Jewish outreach show every Thursday in April. Special Jewish outreach focus this entire month. If you don't yet have your copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, order it today. We've got a special deal. The book plus my DVD outreach lecture. You'll find it really eye-opening at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. You get to watch it and see the Q&A and all that. You can get it paperback. The book and DVD or hardcover, call 1-800-278-9978. Call to order the special resource package, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is not only the God of the living, he is the God of the generations. And he has generational purposes and promises. Think generationally, and you'll be thinking like the Lord. Calling all parents, calling all educators, calling all students. I need to talk to you about some critically important issues coming your way.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, moms and dads, got a question for you. April 20th, what's happening? Moms, dads, you got kids in school. Tell me what's happening April 20th. You say, oh, I don't know, I've checked my calendar. I don't know if we're doing. No, I'm not inviting you to do something. What's happening in your schools? What's happening in schools across America April 20th? Can anyone tell me why it's important? Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-3487-884. You know what's coming on April 20th? Oh, some of you do. It's the Day of Silence. So I'm not familiar with the Day of Silence. Well, it'll be happening in schools all over America, in high schools, colleges, and even in some middle schools, an increasing number of middle schools, the Day of Silence. It is sponsored by GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, Sexual Education Network. Well, they call themselves the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, but it's really the Gay, Lesbian, Sexual Education Network. GLSEN, sponsored by GLSEN, it has been growing and growing and growing over the years. Well, I don't know, maybe 500,000 kids or more will be participating in it. You say, well, what is it? What are we talking about? The Day of Silence is one of the most effective ways for gay activist curriculum to be brought into your children's schools. Day of Silence, as one commenter mentioned on my Facebook page, is to train children who, for any reason, have concerns or disagreements with homosexual behavior. The Day of Silence is a day that initially came up with the term Day of Silence to say that we will be in silence. We will not participate in class or speak unless, you know, called on, we have to or something, but we will be silent the entire day. We will pledge our silence in certain settings to stand with the silencing of the homosexual community, the persecution of the homosexual community. The wording has gotten changed over the years, but you say, well, what do you mean the silencing of the homosexual community? You speak against the homosexual community, you get silenced. Well, no. Here's what it says. Are you ready? Oh, here, I'm looking at the Day of Silence website. Day of Silence is a student-led national event that brings attention to anti-LGBT name-calling, bullying, and harassment in schools. Students from middle school to college take a vow of silence in an effort to encourage schools and classmates to address the problem of anti-LGBT behavior by illustrating the silencing effect of bullying and harassment on LGBT students and those perceived to be LGBT. They keep modifying the language of this because earlier when this started, homosexual activists did not have the progress that they had in our society. They had not made so much progress. They had not made so much impact. They had not been the ones silencing others so much. But it's still called the Day of Silence. And hundreds of thousands of children in thousands of schools across America will be participating. And administrators and principals of schools and teachers will be participating. And some will have an entire week, Gay Propaganda Week, in your children's school. What are you doing about it? Well, you're making this. No, I'm not making this up. And I've talked with some of the kids, some of the Christian kids, in tears over the atmosphere and the oppression and even the inability for them to express their own views. We care about every kid. We care about gay and lesbian kids. We care about any kid who's bullied for any reason, but we absolutely oppose gay activist propaganda in the schools. Is it in your school? Is it in your school? Is it coming your way? You need to know. We'll tell you what you can do about it when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, before I get back to the children, our kids, what's happening in schools, Day of Silence, Christian responses to the Day of Silence, I want to talk to you about a couple of interesting items in the news. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, Jordan, stay right with us in Plant City, Florida. School teacher, I want to hear from you in one moment, so please stay on the line. Excuse me. 866-348-7884. I don't know if you heard about this, but I just talk about this to illustrate where things are at in society today. Miss Universe. Now, let's think about this. Miss. Let's work on the English here. Miss. M-I-S-S. Not Mr. Universe, right? Miss. Miss Universe. That would imply female, would it not? Mm-hmm. Now, Miss Universe had a rule. You have to be born a woman to participate in Miss Universe. Bigoted, intolerant, discriminatory. No. Whether you like the contest or not. I'm not familiar with the contest. I know it exists. Miss Universe. Got to be born a woman to be in the Miss Universe contest. Well, there is, look like a woman. You know, does all the competitions like a woman. So it looks like a woman. Actually, a man who had sex change surgery, said since he was like 4 years old, he's always thought he was a woman, had sex change surgery some years ago, and now is in the Miss Universe contest. Well, they kicked him out because it's for women. And whatever female looks he has in terms of specific female body parts and things, that's obviously by plastic surgery because he wasn't born with that. That also, you could say, puts him in a situation which is going to be different than the other women who are seeking to show off their God-given looks. I don't think they should be showing them off like that, but that's another story. Okay, so the mister who identifies as a miss now and has had sex change surgery and is legally a miss was kicked out. Okay, well, it's understandable. You got to be born a woman. It's, there it is in the guidelines. Well, there was such an outcry that he's now back in the competition. Uh-huh. That's correct. He's now back in the competition. I mean, we're having this happen with increasing frequency. And if you differ with it, I have compassion on anyone that goes through sex change surgery. The issues in their lives, the confusion, the problems, the pain they've dealt with, the disorientation between who they feel they are on the inside and their bodily identity, those must be very traumatic to get someone to go as far as to have sex change surgery. My heart goes out to those people. They need our love, our compassion. They do not need our affirmation in terms of you did the right thing, and now I embrace you for doing that right thing. So, look, I was on a radio show one time, a secular radio show, and a caller called in. He was upset with me. He said a man who identifies as a woman should be able to use the ladies' bathroom. That's his right. I said, what about the right of the ladies in the ladies' room? So everything gets turned on its head. Everything gets turned upside down based on special needs of individuals or how they identify. And this is spreading through our schools today. Did I say spreading? I meant to say spreading. And it's all part of gay activist agenda. In their mind, they are reaching out to the marginalized. They're reaching out to those who are rejected. They're reaching out to the victims of bullying and so on. And so they would justify it, and they would also say, look, this is the way people are, and you just have to accept it, recognizing that someone struggles and restructuring society based on that person's struggles are two totally different things, my friends. And I want to say this, and then I want to go to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH, and then I'm going to tell you more about the Day of Silence. I've got another news item to talk about as well. But I can guarantee you, as sure as I am sitting here in our radio studio at a hidden location outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, as surely as I am sitting here, Randy, wave at me if I am sitting here. He verifies I am sitting here. My voice tells you I am sitting here. As surely as I am sitting here broadcasting, I guarantee you that 5 or 10 years from now, thanks for waving, Andrew and Joey, also great. As surely as I am sitting here and speaking to you, I can guarantee you that in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, not a single one of you who cares about family and kids, not a single one of you who cares about God's truth will tell me I sounded the alarm too much. Not a single one of you will tell me I raised my voice too much. Not a single one of you will tell me I shouldn't have drawn attention to these issues. That's how far things will have come, either radical turning from the Lord or the massive cultural degeneration of which we warn. Either way, you'll be thanking me rather than criticizing me. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the schools. Jordan in Plant City, Florida. You're a school teacher, Jordan?
Yes, I just got home a little while ago.
And what grades or subjects do you teach?
I'm not going to get too specific.
That's fine.
Elementary school. I'm not going to name the school. I teach in one of the lower grades, and this came up today in the teacher's lounge during our lunch break. And I know from a video that I saw that they're going to compare. I'm going to tell you right now, this is bad. This is only going to get bad because these kids are going to grow up just like the kids in the 60s. What's happening is they have I don't know if this is a national video or a local video. They have a video of us, say, people like the Reverend Ralph Abernathy. I don't know if you remember
him. Of course, you're a civil rights leader.
Yes, yes, and he was a great man, Reverend Ralph Abernathy and Martin Luther King and other individuals. And every time they show one of them, then they show a man like Mayor Harvey Milk, from mm-hmm. San Francisco, who was killed, assassinated.
Yeah, he wasn't a mayor. He was just an elected politician. But yeah, Harvey Miller. And I'm sorry, Jordan. Let me just jump in 1 second for hearers just tuning in. I introduced the show by talking about the Day of Silence, April 20th, Gay Activist Propaganda Day. Continues to spread rapidly in schools across America. Coming away April 20th. Wanted to make sure every parent was aware of this. And Jordan, who teaches at an elementary school, said that this came up in the teacher's lounge, elementary school, and the way this is going to be presented, that basically what kids are going to be learning, and they are learning in schools across America, here's a picture of a civil rights leader, a champion of civil rights like Reverend Ralph Abernathy, and now here's a gay activist leader. And
that's
okay,
right.
So go ahead, sir.
That's right. So how it is? Well, first of all, I'm offended by this. All right, I'm a Christian. Obviously, I listen to your show. I happen to be a black man, and I was born with this skin, which anyone can see. So they can be prejudiced. They can be racist. A homosexual, only if he or she announces their sexuality, is there a potential for some kind of a bigotry. But they want to equivocate a black man in the struggles of black people of all the years from slavery to now with what the gay individuals, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people are going through now. And I will tell you, we have activist children in our schools right now who look at this as the same thing as black people not mm-hmm. being allowed to drink out of the same bubbler or water fountain as a white individual. And I would say to you that your task is monumental. I do not see a victory here, sir. I would say to you that it is next to impossible. You have TV shows. My children watch a show called Glee. Are you
of familiar course.
With Glee?
You bet I'm familiar, sadly so.
Well, you understand then that there are millions of children that watch that show, and they have nothing but empathy for the gay individuals in that show and the themes. And there are many other shows.
And Jordan, just to jump in, you know, Glee is super popular with kids. It is super gay positive. And if you have a Christian episode, it's Christian bashing as well. And Jordan, I want to talk to you a minute, Lauren, if you could hang on. But I want to say this. In the natural, I totally agree. In the natural, it's over. I'm just trusting that God is going to do something and is going to awaken his people. and that the fruit of the wrong direction of gay activism is going to be born for people to really see what's going on. But in point of fact, when I got the burden for this 8 years ago, I knew in the natural, sir, it was all over. In the natural, I knew there was no way to turn this but God. So I've been carrying this burden and trusting the Lord is going to awaken his people. But I have the same viewpoint that you do, sir. This is too entrenched in our schools, just schools and media, let alone everything else. The battle has already been won by those with very, very different values. And we must pray for them, but we've got to take a stand. All right, I've got a couple more questions, if you can stand along.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
All right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. We are talking about Gay Activist Day of Silence. It's been in the schools for years now. It continues to grow. They boast of more than 500,000 kids participating. You say, well, I mean, bullying is bad. You can teach bullying is bad without teaching that gay is good. And the Gay Activist Day of Silence makes clear that homosexuality, bisexuality, transgenderism, these things are all fine in themselves. They are just other equivalents to heterosexuality. Makes clear that any moral, spiritual, societal, ethical opposition you might have to homosexual practice for any reason is bigoted, intolerant. And there needs to be an embracing of homosexuality, even an encouraging of it, and it gets to schools younger and younger and younger. It is mandatory in all schools. SB 48, Senate Bill 48 passed in California, is now mandatory in all schools. The celebration of homosexual history, LGBT history, in all classes. Students can't opt out. Teachers can't opt out. Mandatory throughout all public schools in California and in so many other schools right now across America. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be giving you some Christian alternatives to that in the next few days on the show today. But make sure you find out, is this happening in your school? You need to call the principal. You need to find out from the school, is there a day of silence happening in my school April 20th? Every parent, please do this. You owe it to your kids to do this. I'm back with Jordan, elementary school teacher in Plant City, Florida. Sir, even the fact that you don't want to give more details about where you teach or what you teach, there's a reason for that. What is that?
Retribution, the possibility of me being in serious trouble. Possibly I could even lose my job. That's obviously why I would be very careful right now to say any more. But
And just for our listeners, please understand that this whole thing of day of silence because the gays and lesbians are being silenced, it's quite the contrary. I know there are kids that get picked on, and I've got compassion for any kid that gets picked on for any reason, unless they're intentionally bringing something on themselves and they're just foolish. But for whatever the reason, if kids are bullied, picked on, my heart goes out to them. It's troubling. Kids grow up messed up because of it, bad self-image. Some commit suicide. That's a problem. That's a totally separate issue than gay activism. But those that differ are being silenced, and this is a living example of it. So, Jordan, what was the context that this was being discussed in the teacher's lounge? Why is it being discussed in an elementary school, sir?
Well, one of the teachers received an email from administration that this was going to come up and that we had to decide whether they were going to make it mandatory or if there were some teachers that could opt out. And then I brought up that I, as a Christian, was uncomfortable with this. And then one of the teachers said that it wouldn't be a good idea for me to mention, or if a child was to say, well, I'm a Christian and I don't want to speak about this, we're going to have a problem. I don't know how we're going to handle this. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm worried that they will tell us, listen, you cannot bring up anything religious or anything of that nature when these conversations or this, if this is in the curriculum for a day or a week, that you can't bring, if someone starts bringing up religion, it has to be immediately steered away from that conversation. conversation, and that we have to go back to a conversation of civil rights. And the civil rights conversation has to be linked to that of the civil rights movement of the 1960s, specifically the 1964 civil rights movement, when we had so much that went on in this country to give black people the rights that they have now.
So this is being discussed as potentially being brought into an elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Friends, I'm not exaggerating. I have not spent years carrying this burden and writing A Queer Thing Happened to America and taking the stands that we take because I've got nothing else to do. So, Jordan, I just want to take one more minute of your time.
Yeah.
I know you just finished teaching, so I appreciate so much you calling
fine.
In.
I'm fine.
So we got a couple minutes before the break. So let me ask you this. You have devoted years of your life to teaching young children, little children in elementary school. And you said earlier grades in elementary school.
Yeah.
It's important to put positive things into kids because they're very impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
But how much does an elementary school kid understand about sexuality and their own sexuality and even concepts like that?
I can tell you that there are some children that do understand what's going on, and I can tell you there are many that don't. But the thing is that the class that I'm teaching, none of these children are anywhere near puberty. All right, they're way underneath that.
Yeah, yeah.
What these clever people are doing, okay, is they almost make it that it's not a sexuality, that it is a race of people.
Yeah.
So once we get into that lie, then we can make another lie that, well, you know, they're just like what happened with African American, what happened with black people back 50 years ago, and
yeah.
You make those correlations, and then, oh, well, you know, I guess one can teach whatever one wants to. We have many energized students in the school that I teach, and I'm sure this is the case in many places, that are galvanized and energized on bringing, and these children are talking about gay marriage. I mean, they don't even know what marriage is. They're talking about gay marriage, and they have all these stories about parents, two men, and it's a wonderful thing. And I'll tell you that there are so many things that they also link up with these different TV shows, such as Glee. You should look into that more, sir. I think you will find that they're involved in schools throughout the whole country. And this is not just a small little TV show. This is much more involved.
But it all links together. Yeah, and Jordan, let me say this. I've said many times your average gay lesbian person is not an activist. They're seeking to live their lives, but you have many activists, and then they've got straight allies now. The kids have gotten energized because, hey, this is about being, my friend's getting picked on. I got to stand up for my friend. Then once it becomes the oppressed minority, then you get away from the fact that you're talking about either an attraction or a behavior. And ones that are ultimately very destructive in many other ways to a kid's life. So, and plus violate so many moral and biblical principles, and thus are worse for everyone involved. You know, I don't talk about this 24/7 on the radio, but I could because it's that pressing. Hey, I'm out of time, sir, but I want to send you a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America.
Very kind.
Please let us know. So stay on the line. We'll get your address. Please let us know any ways we can be of help and solidarity. And, sir, if any issues come up at any point, legal issues, there are Christian attorneys willing to stand up for teachers' rights all around America. Thank you for the call. Stay on the line, sir. We want to send you a copy of A Queer Thing Happened to America. Friend, I'm not making this up, and this was not an orchestrated phone call. This is a black elementary school teacher sounding the alarm as well. Are we listening? Do you have your own copy of A Queer Thing Happened to America yet? You can order it by calling 1-800-278-9978. It wasn't our featured resource this week, but you can always order it. Call now. You need to know what's in this book. Stake of our kids, future generations is at stake.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm holding in my hands an article written by Linda Harvey, a colleague who maybe even hated more than me, at least at times she is. 10 reasons to walk out on Day of Silence. You say, well, what's the Day of Silence? Ah, your parent, maybe your grandparent, you're responsible for your kids. Maybe your student listening now just got out of school. Do you know about the Day of Silence? Some of you are nodding. Some, no, don't know about it. April 20th, all over America, at least 500,000 kids, I think, will be participating in it if numbers hold up. Perhaps it's still growing in momentum. I can't say. It's harder to grow in momentum when so much of what it's arguing for is kind of contradictory. I'll explain that in a moment. But Day of Silence is Gay Activist Day in the schools. Now, I have been burdened about this. One reason I wrote A Queer Thing Happened to America is because of what's happening in our schools. These things have greatly concerned me for years and years and years. But I am even more burdened after the call that came in the first half hour. Because Day of Silence is a day sponsored by the Gay, Lesbian, Sexual Education Network, GLSEN. That's what I call them. Gay, Lesbian, Sexual Education Network, GLSEN. Sponsored by them to introduce gay activist curriculum in schools across America under the guise of saying we need to show silence, be silent through the day in solidarity with gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids who are silenced. Now, of course, you think, well, they seem to be having a very strong voice all over society and strong presence in the media and strong presence politically. I mean, even if you're a presidential candidate and you say marriage is the union of a man and woman, people flipping out over that. And how can you say that and be bigoted and intolerant and so on and so forth? I got a call in the first half hour, though, friends, from an elementary school teacher. Oh, yeah, this is in the high schools and then more and more middle schools. I got a call from an elementary school teacher, just got off the phone with him before the break. Number one, he did not want to identify in too much detail where he taught or what grades he taught for fear of potential repercussions. So what's the guy, paranoid? No, realistic. Realistic. The silencing is coming against those who speak the truth. The silencing is coming against those who are walking in love based on biblical values. The silencing is coming against us. He is a black American teaching elementary school students. And he wanted me to know that in the teacher's lounge, they were just discussing the potential implementation of the Day of Silence in their elementary school. Parents, every parent listening, every parent listening to me, if you've got kids in the public school system in particular, you need to check. This is not in private schools yet, unless it's, I mean, non-religious private school. Well, who knows? It's, as far as I know, not in private schools largely. But public schools all over America celebrating the Day of Silence, you need to immediately contact your school and say, will you be participating in the Day of Silence on April 20th? And then we'll tell you what you can do. There's a call for a Day of Silence walkout. There's another alternative, Day of Dialogue, which requires a more aggressive stance of getting involved and calling on a school to get involved. And then your kid saying, this is a day instead of silence. We're going to dialogue, having an alternative day to do it. All right? We actually, friends, had to send the book to another address so that Jordan would not even risk having my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, received at his house. You say he's paranoid. Friends, I don't think you realize what's happening these days and the pressure educators and others are under. Call your school. Find out immediately. Is the Day of Silence taking place April 20th? If so, pull your kids out of school that day and participate in the Day of Dialogue where you get your message out. But don't let your kids be subjected to gay activism and silenced. It is a day of silencing us.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The day of silence, man, I'm telling you, this is the day of silencing. The day of silencing. It is the day of silencing other viewpoints. The day of silencing those who say God intended a man to be with a woman. The day of silencing those who say, you know, we can teach bullying is bad without saying gay is good. The day of silencing religious viewpoints, separation of church and state. The day of silencing those who say that I do not believe endorsing homosexual behavior is the same as the black civil rights movement. Silence other viewpoints. Really, that's why it's called the day of silence. Well, of course, I'll get mocked for what happens to catch that. That'll be utterly mocked and vilified for saying that. But I'm making a point. It's I understand where the origins come from and the concept of the day of silence. But as each day goes by, it is the silencing of those who differ. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let me give you an illustration, all right? If you didn't hear about this, talked about it briefly earlier in the week. Lexington, Kentucky. There is a t-shirt company, printing company called Hands On Originals. They've done hundreds of thousands of dollars of business with the public school system of Lexington, with the universities. And Christian owned. Lexington Pride people came in wanting a quote on t-shirts. Someone gave them a quote on the t-shirts. They came back and said, okay, we'd like you to do them. The owner said, oh, Lexington Pride, that's a gay pride event. Sorry, we can't do that. We're Christians, and we're not going to print up T-shirts that violate our convictions. Sorry, we can't do that. Okay, understandable. Not understandable. Bigotry, intolerance. The mayor blasted them. Very, very strong terms. The public schools and the university holding off on any business with them, hundreds of thousands of dollars of business, holding off on any business with them because of this bigoted, intolerant stand. You have no right to differ. You have no right to say, I don't accept this. You say, no, but we're just talking civil rights. Where is it mandated that a privately owned company needs to produce gay activist t-shirts? Please tell me where that is mandated. You say, well, once you enshrine in the law sexual orientation and discrimination law, then it becomes a matter of discrimination. See, that's what actually happens. And then the discrimination goes the other way, that you can't hold Christian conviction. And I wonder, honestly, I genuinely wonder if there was a gay-owned shop and there was a Christian conference, maybe it was an Exodus conference, and someone, an organizer said, hey, we're printing up these t-shirts, change is possible. Or I used to be gay, and they went into the gay-owned shop and said, hey, could you print these up? And the gay-owned shop said, no, that offends us. We think that's wrong. And I wonder if there would be any criminal prosecution, or if there would be boycotts, or if there would be loss of businesses, or if the mayor would be speaking out against them, or if people would say, hey, look, they're wrong. You know, I differ with them, but that's their right. That's their prerogative. I differ with their moral stand, but that's their prerogative. Things are going only one way, friends. And when it may be one thing you say, I got to deal with all kinds of stuff on my job, and that's, you know, and what a company does or not, that's their choice. But don't mess with my kids. Okay, this is messing with our kids. The day of silence messes with your kids. And in some schools, there's a whole week of gay activist curriculum on the day of silence. April 20th. Is it happening in your schools? It's happening in thousands of schools across America. You really need to know about this. And all the more reason, friends, May 8th, everyone living in North Carolina, I'll remind you again, May 8th, all the more reason to send a message loud and clear to our state, to our nation. We love every person living here, but we are not going to redefine marriage, and we're not going to let a gay activist judge or any activist judge redefine marriage. So we're going to found it, ground it in our Constitution, in an amendment that marriage is union of a man and woman, which is the way God intended it, and which is the only way that marriage should ever be defined, the union of a man and woman. May 8th, make sure you vote, friends. Whether you're politically involved or not, this is not politics, this is righteousness. 866-34-TRUTH. Jim in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Good afternoon, Doc. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you, sir.
Good, good. I'm glad you're bringing this up because a lot of people were not aware of it. I think there ought to be an effort to go in front of this day of silence with a day of prayer a day or two before it, because this is really, really getting serious.
Well, actually, here's what's happened. There are two major initiatives, Jim. One is the Day of Dialogue, and it is now being led by Focus on the Family. It used to be called the Day of Truth, but they call it the Day of Dialogue now, to hold that on April 19th, the day before. If folks go to the dayofdialogue.com, dayofdialogue.com, if they go there, they'll find links about what the kids can do to discuss these issues. Say, let's not be silent. Let's have a discussion. Let's talk about how can I speak about what God's word says in my school? What are the things I'm allowed to do and the freedoms that I have and so on? So that's one thing, the Day of Dialogue, April 19th, to equip the kids in a practical, godly way to make a difference and to do it with compassion. Again, that's dayofdialogue.com. And then the Day of Silence walkout, the other thing that kids can do, if it's happening in their schools, parents can say, okay, I'm going to pull my kids out on this day to make a statement, that I stand against gay activist propaganda being pushed down my kids' throat on this day. I stand against the school making a public statement that they are participating in the Day of Silence. That is telling my kids that they are standing for gay activist propaganda. And Jim, again, I talked to a school teacher the last half hour who said it's being discussed to be implemented in his elementary school. So this is not just for the older grades. Linda Harvey says this, the Day of Silence goal is not, as I'm told frequently by outraged emails from misinformed students, to help end all bullying. The goal is to exploit the tender sympathies of kids to promote homosexuality and gender confusion. So Jim, by all means, let us be praying, and then let's get active along with that. Thank you so much for the call, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. John in Raleigh, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Sure, thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
You know, my wife and I, we're trying to discern whether or not we should have our 9-year-old daughter a part of the Girl Scouts. Her troop leaders agree, but we have recently been made aware of some affiliations that the Girl Scouts do have.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're trying to just figure out if this is what, you know, a Christian family should have their daughter affiliated with.
Yeah, John.
So I just wanted to see if you could weigh in with that, on that.
Yeah, yes, sir. In point of fact, John, the Girl Scouts are different than the Boy Scouts. They're each independent organizations. The Girl Scouts do have some very strong associations with organizations and stances that we would say are very much anti-family and anti-biblical values. They are now on record as saying, of course, we take boys in who identify as girls. If that's the way they present themselves and identify, of course we do. We are inclusive. There was a big case that happened in Denver that got national attention, and they said, of course, this boy who identifies as a girl is welcome as a Girl Scout, and we are an inclusive organization. I actually had a colleague that's done a lot of research on this and has presented things. If you could just give us your email, we'll put you on hold when we're done. We will get you some of this info so that you can look into this more fully and really make a decision and then see some of the alternatives. Obviously, you have to weigh it because this may be a very positive thing for your daughter right now, and there may be nothing wrong with the local troop. So you may need to weigh it, and then when you find an alternative to put her into to make that choice. But if you just give an email address to Andrew, he's going to talk to you in a moment. If you give me an email address and your name, within the next 24 to 48 hours. I want to send you more information so that you can look at what the Girl Scouts stand for, what they're involved with on a national level, and alternative things that may even be happening in your community in Raleigh. And as I've been speaking to folks from North Carolina, remember again, May 8th, it's a very, very important day, very, very, excuse me for my voice here, very, very important day for us to be standing for righteousness as we vote to uphold marriage as God intended, male, female. All right, we come back. Dan, Lori, I want to talk to you about Day of Silence in schools. And in fact, Lori, we'll start there since you work in a high school. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, if you go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. If you'll go there, you will find a post of mine, Gay Activists Want to Impact Your School Children on April 20th. What are you going to do? Here's a way to respond. And I have a link to the Day of Silence Walkout. That's doswalkout.net, D-O-S, doswalkout.net. That will lay out walking out and why. And then there's also dayofdialogue.com, which explains what you can do the day before to impact your school with truth. 866-34-TRUTH. Lori in Portland, Oregon, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I think your interviewer misunderstood. I don't currently work at a high school, but I did in 2006 through 2008 for 3 years. I worked at a high school where, of course, they had the Day of Silence. They had GSA. They had
GSA, for our listeners, that's Gay Straight Alliances. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And and as a Christian, yeah, I feel I often suffer guilt for having been as scared as I was to, you know, to I used to whisper things to the kids just about, you know, God loving them and, you know, about Jesus and stuff like that. But it was always whispered and I was always scared. But I had just a thought just now. I thought, what if this Christian kid adopted the Day of Silence as their Day of Silence, to wear Christian T-shirts that said, I love the Lord, or had a cross or whatever, and said, we are the ones that are silenced. Wear those on the same day. What do you think would happen?
Well, in point of fact, Christian kids have done this and actually gotten in trouble for it. And I think it's a great idea. In other words, my mentality is, if you're going to be there, make a difference. Now, you know, the younger the kid, the more I would pull them out.
I've heard about Christian kids doing it like the following day or something.
Well, it's actually
we had this comparative thing happening on that day.
No, I understand that, and what I'm saying is, when kids are younger, I don't want them exposed to this trash, and I would pull my kids out as they're younger. As they're older, if they're strong-headed and clear and don't mind being in the midst of controversy, then, yeah, I would send them in wearing their own messages, wearing their own T-shirts, getting their own message out. The problem is that sometimes these kids have actually been silenced. You can't wear stuff that would be considered anti-gay or something. Or the other challenge is that the kids that are being silent may not actually speak or engage. But whatever we can do on a national level, on a corporate level, wonderful. But whatever any individual kid could do, if that's going on in your school, there's a day of silence, and you're a kid strong, you know, 16-year-old kid, say, hey, Mom, Dad, I've got a message I want to get out. And they have a shirt, you know, Christians are being silenced. Wear that to school on the Day of Silence. Absolutely. All for it. And, hey, Lori, may the Lord give you more opportunities to be courageous and bold so that whatever you regret from the past, you'll get to live out in the future, all right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Sure. God bless. 866-34-TRUTH. Dan in Des Moines, Iowa, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, Dr. Brown, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. For one, are you saying they shouldn't show up that day, period, or are you saying that we should make a statement by having them walk out, like my car? Or, and two, that's the repercussions is for their truancy. I mean, it's a public school that my kids go to, but at the same time, like you say, I don't want the stuff pushed down their throat. You know, we can't speak our voice freely without it being hatred speech. At the same time, you know, I got a 9-year-old daughter, 13-year-old boy, and I don't want them, you know.
Yeah, so thanks for asking for clarification, Dan, because it didn't even dawn on me that walkout would be unclear. So thank you so much for asking that. What you would be saying is you would send a note in the day before that your kids will not be there that next day, and you simply keep them out of school that day. And obviously not every parent can do that. They're not there for the kids. You know, work it out with other parents, however you can, to keep your kids back. And Dan, if you'll take a moment to go to the website DOS, as in Day of Silence, doswalkout.net, doswalkout.net. It'll lay things out. This has been put together by educators, by people who are involved in the schools, and by people who understand what parental rights are. So if you go to doswalkout.net, it'll give you all the practical information you need, and it's absolutely your parental right to say, hey, I don't want this stuff being put down my kid's throat. But first thing, make sure that it's happening in your kid's schools, because it happens in many schools, and in many other schools it doesn't happen. So you need to understand, okay, is this something officially happening in the schools? Because the school administration will know about it. And if it's happening, then that's when you take action. Thank you for the call and for being a concerned dad. I appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, Nancy, we'll stay in Des Moines, Iowa. One more moment. We're real short on time, but please dive right in. Hello, Nancy.
Hello?
Yes, we're real short on time, but please dive in.
Real short. Talk about being bullied. The religious definition of marriage is between a man and a woman, and that is historical. It's a religious definition. The state of Iowa was developed after the Bible, the Torah, and the Torah, or, you know, the other Bibles, they were all established. What gives the state of Iowa the right to change a religious definition? We need to stand up for that definition.
Yeah, and Nancy, I mean, this is such a timely call because of what happened in Iowa with seven justices. And we're not just talking about religious definition. We're talking about the only definition we've ever known in American history and basically in world history in terms of what marriage is. And you had these judges, when reading their decision, I didn't read all of it, the parts I read, I was just shaking my head, think, what are they thinking? What kind of argument decision is this? And yet, they redefine marriage for the state. Why we're saying you all need to vote May 8th, why we're saying it's imperative that you all vote May 8th is so that this cannot happen, so that this cannot happen in North Carolina, because it will be enshrined in the amendment and no activist judge can overthrow it. So make sure you vote to uphold marriage on May 8th. Let me change gears because this is the week of the release of of the Real Kosher Jesus. You see what I was thinking? Tomorrow's broadcast will be a special Jewish outreach broadcast. So please join me tomorrow. Get your Jewish friends to listen. If you don't yet have your copy of The Real Kosher Jesus, you can get it in paperback or exclusive hardcover edition. And we are packaging it together with a wonderful DVD of an outreach lecture I gave at Hebrew University in Jerusalem with live Q&A. So call to order our special research package in paperback or hardback, 1-800-278-9978. Get The Real Kosher Jesus. It'll impact you and be a great tool for Jewish evangelism. 1-800-278-9978. 7-8. My bottom line today, it is imperative that we stand up for what is right for our children. It is imperative that we speak the truth in love to educators and administrators. It is imperative that we let no one silence us.